Here's a question. Did the federal government become a loan shark back in 2008 and 2009? As the financial meltdown took hold and profits and interest rates plummeted in the U.S., did the federal treasury take advantage of some financial companies? That's what's being argued in court this week. Former head of AIG, Maurice Hank Greenberg, is suing the federal government for charging an outrageous interest rate. The $182 billion lifeline the feds gave to AIG during the meltdown was at an interest rate far above other banks, bailed out, and charged more like 3 or 4%. AIG attorney David Boyce called the 14% interest rate that AIG was charged extortion. Noam Scheiber is a senior editor at The New Republic and author of The Escape Artists, How Obama's Team Fumbled the Recovery. Noam, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
Does David Boyce have a point? I mean, of course he has a point. He's a lawyer. But is this a legitimate argument that may fly here?
Well, I think AIG and AIG shareholders, of which Star International, the company officially suing the government, is a very large one. I think they have a point about fairness in some abstract sense. It's true that the government imposed much stiffer terms on AIG than on other large financial institutions that were bailed out. But if you step back and think about the context, AIG was melting down, you know, rather spectacularly in September of 2008. Had the government not stepped in and saved AIG, regardless of the terms, the shares that that Star says were sort of confiscated from them would have been worth nothing. And so now they're worth a lot more than they would have been. And so I think you have to keep that in mind when you think about the claims that Star is making. So I think the lawsuit is a little bit far-fetched, both I'm not a lawyer, but from what I understand from lawyers, in legal terms, I think just in terms of fairness, in a very narrow sense, you could argue it was unfair. But if you think about the broader context, the taxpayers really were AIG's only hope at that point. And without their intervention, they would have the AIG shareholders would have had nothing. So it's hard to suggest that they were entitled to a whole lot more, even if other companies got better terms.
2 points here. Number one, AIG was a very special company. It wasn't really like other banks and had a very special relationship with the economy and with the federal government. That's one. And then number two, when you set interest rates, you basically set them based on the risk that you're taking in bailing a company out. And it seems that one could make the argument that a 14% interest rate was consistent with just how quickly, as you say, AIG was melting away.
Yeah, AIG really was in a huge amount of trouble. You know, it, as you suggest, it had relationships with financial institutions across the economy. So had it gone under, the implications could have rippled through the economy pretty quickly. You know, I think it's important to think about the original sin here, which was for AIG to insinuate itself into all these financial contracts that were really spectacularly unwise bets. So AIG had placed a lot of terrible bets. Those bets went wrong. When it went wrong, it was going to incinerate AIG and potentially the entire financial system. So the government was probably right to not have a lot of sympathy for AIG shareholders at that point.
And remind us of the bets. The AIG was the source of a lot of the credit default swaps, the hedges, the sort of insurance policies on other transactions throughout the economy. Is that right?
Exactly, yeah. So a lot of people had invested basically in mortgage securities and other structured financial vehicles tied to mortgage securities or with a lot of mortgage securities sort of embedded in them. And, you know, realizing that those securities could lose value, they had turned to insurers like AIG to essentially buy insurance against the loss of value of those securities. And AIG was basically the biggest insurer of those mortgage securities. So when the mortgage market went south, really beginning in late 2005, early 2006, but certainly very acutely in 2008, AIG was on the hook for billions in losses on those mortgage securities that it had insured.
All right, so that's the financial and economics lesson here. I suspect the entertainment value for people who watch this sort of thing is going to be watching Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, Timothy Geithner, Ben Bernanke actually on the witness stand here, right?
Yeah, no question. So as kind of preposterous as I think the AIG suit itself is, there are some important underlying questions that have still yet to be resolved here. And I think the biggest question is, why is it that AIG, which at that point was essentially a ward of the state, needed to pay off the parties that it were was insuring at 100 cents on the dollar? Oftentimes, certainly in the private sector, if there is an insurance company that is going belly up, and there is what's known as a reinsurance company that's supposed to sort of back its claims, so direct insurers often then get another layer of insurance, which is called reinsurance. In the private sector, if the first insurer goes under and the reinsurer suddenly has to step in the way that the U.S. government had to step in for AIG, it will often demand a massive discount, you know, 50, 60 cents on the dollar instead of paying in full to all the people that the original company has insured. So I think the question a lot of people have is why the government, which was essentially acting as AIG's big reinsurer at that point, didn't do the same thing, something that's pretty standard in the private sector.
Noam Scheiber is senior editor at The New Republic and author of The Escape Artists, How Obama's Team Fumbled the Recovery, talking about AIG's lawsuit, or the holders of AIG securities suing the federal government for its 14% interest. It's a $40 billion lawsuit. Noam, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.